You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 in the metropolitan area, 91.9 if you are in Hood River and the Gorge, and the Willamette River Valley, it's 100.7. And on the internet, KBOO comes in at www.kboo.fm. Tell your friends far-flung and wide to click and listen. Good morning. This is More Talk Radio. This is Celeste Carey flying solo today, sending out my shout-outs to my cohort there, Cecil. Have a wonderful day. And we're hoping you're going to have a wonderful day today because we're hoping to lie some lies to rest. Or would that be lay some lies to rest? Maybe that's what it is, yes. We know that as we approach that age of retirement or that dreamed of age of retirement for some of us who might be still working for a while, there are some concerns. We have concerns because we hear that part of the plan for a healthy and viable retirement, and that being Social Security, is in danger. Now, it doesn't matter how many shows we've had here on KBOO. It doesn't matter how many times you've had people come on the air or you have had workshops at your place of employment or what research you yourself have done. You find that there is still a lot of information, disinformation, misinformation out there that tells you that Social Security is in dire straits. We need to overhaul it. It needs changes. It needs to be improved. It needs to be helped. It needs to be bailed out. Well, once again, because that is one of the stories that refuses to die here on More Talk Radio, we're going to bring up the issue again. Why? Because it's really important for you to get the truth so that you can make informed decisions and you know where to put pressure on our elected officials to make sure that they do the proper job. And so we have with us here today Max Richmond. He is the acting CEO of one of the nation's largest seniors advocacy organization. Max Richmond is currently the executive vice president and has served national committee since 1989. And I welcome him here today to speak with us about the myth that won't die, and that is Social Security is in trouble. Good morning. Okay, I'm getting a high signal here from my engineer. Good morning, Max. Are you with us? Okay, well, we're having a moment of technical difficulties, and I see my engineer is giving me the kick is not good signal here. So in the meantime, let me give you the phone number so that you can get your questions together. First, the phone number here is 503-231-8187. That's the first thing. The second thing is, some of you may have attended workshops. I know for my employer, we have had classes such as Social Security 101 to help us understand some of the questions that are really important to us about Social Security. So if you have had questions because you are approaching the age of retirement or as a younger person, maybe in your 40s or 30s or 20s, you want to know, is Social Security even going to be around? How best to plan for your retirement? Will you be able to retire? Those are some questions maybe you might want to have. Some of you may have more sophisticated questions because you've been doing research. For example, some time ago, we had a gentleman who called in. He was very irate because he says, well, I know that within the Social Security Reserve Fund, or Trust Fund, as some people have called it, the money that's supposed to be there is not there because the government has raided it. And so he was very irate. He wanted to know, how are we going to have money? And the guest explained that even if there were absolutely nothing done and we just ran the program as it is right now to 2027, we would still be able to pay bills and how that could happen. But if you have questions about Social Security, either specifically about your ability to retire or the viability of the trust fund or what are some of the changes that are legitimately coming down the pike, it's a good time to write those questions down and dial our phone number. I'll have a few minutes of intro with our guest, and then you can dial at 503-231-8187 and join in the conversation. Good morning. Are you with us now, Max?
I am.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us and to explain to us, as I've told the my listeners, the myth about Social Security that just won't die. First, can you tell us a little bit about your organization, the National Committee, of which you are Vice President, National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare?
Right. Our organization is a second largest in terms of membership, senior organization, and we are committed to education and advocacy. We lobby on behalf of Social Security and Medicare to protect them, as our name really says it all. We have about 3.5 million members and supporters around the country. We have a political action committee. We're very involved in campaigns. We are bipartisan. We work with both sides, Democrat and Republican, and support candidates and incumbents through our political action committee who have shown that they appreciate these programs and are committed to continuing them.
Great. It's good to know that we have someone who is actually continuing to sound the alarm and to keep us apprised of what's going down the pike. And so one of the things that I understand from looking at your website, and for those who want to follow online, the website is www.n, as in Nancy, C as in Charlie, PSSM.org, NCPSSM.org. I understand that you have had a three-prong campaign that you've rolled out. Now, I know you touched on it just briefly, but can you talk a little bit more about what each of the three phases of that campaign have been aimed at?
Well, overall, we've been devoting an enormous amount of time to dispelling the myths that you mentioned, one of them, in your introduction. There are really so many myths about these programs, particularly Social Security, and we hold town meetings around the country with members of Congress. I've probably been involved in a couple hundred over the years, including in the Portland and Oregon area. And what we hear over and over again is people expressing concern, to put it mildly, that the Social Security program won't exist for them in the future, especially with younger people who some poll reveal that they feel they're more likely to see a UFO than to ever get a Social Security check. And that myth that the program is broken, is bankrupt, has been perpetuated for many years and was really the basis for, I think, for the effort by President Bush in after he was reelected in 2004, of making a very bold move to privatize the program. And underlying his effort was the message, false message, that there won't be any money there, so you better invest it yourself if you want to have any benefits from the payroll tax that you've been paying for years. The truth is, as the trustees of the program have indicated, the trustees issue a report every spring, and about 2 weeks ago, they said, as far as Social Security was concerned, this program will pay every penny people are entitled to for the next 25 years until the year 2036. That was a year was lopped off of that from the previous report. And that was primarily due to a recession and the high unemployment, which obviously meant fewer dollars going into the Social Security program via the payroll tax. That's quite understandable. If the Congress and the president do nothing at all, this program will pay everyone their benefits until 2036, and thereafter would pay about 77, 78% of what people are entitled to.
And that, just to clarify that, that means like 78 cents on the dollar for people who...
Exactly.
Yes.
And that is a problem. It's a big problem, and it needs to be addressed. But we feel that that problem should be addressed not in the context of a crisis, that the program is broke, but in the same way it was addressed back in the early 80s when we weren't looking at 25 years before that full benefits would not be able to be paid, but more like 4 to 5 months. We don't want to get to that point. But that is very different than approaching, just even psychologically, changing a program that is broke or bankrupt. And that term is thrown around so often and so loosely. A program that is bankrupt is not able to finance its purpose for 25 years. So that is one of the myths that we have tried over and over again to dispel. The other more immediate effort we're engaged in is to explain how Social Security should not be included in any of these considerations of our federal debt. It didn't cause the debt, hasn't contributed a penny to the debt, has $2.6 trillion in surplus, been more money that was paid in than was paid out over the last 25 years or so. And that's by design. The last time the Congress addressed Social Security, they put in place a mechanism to build up a reserve, which has happened, to be used to begin paying benefits to the baby boomers, which are just getting into the program. So we're trying to separate Social Security and any reforms and adjustments that need to be made to have the program sound well beyond 2036 from the effort and serious effort to address a serious problem, which is our federal debt. There is right now $2.6 trillion in the Social Security Trust Fund. That will grow to about $3.7 trillion by the year 2022 when it starts to diminish, and the trust fund itself will not have any money without any changes in 2036, but there will still be payroll taxes, and that's where we get the 77 or 78% of benefits that would be paid. That's what needs to be addressed.
Okay, now let me jump in here because that's a good place for us to take a break and start asking a few questions. For those of you who just tuned in, you're listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Celeste Carey here on your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the Hood River Gorge. If you're in the Willamette River Valley, it's 100.7 on the internet, KBOO.FM. We're speaking with Max Richmond, who is the CEO of the nation's largest seniors advocacy organization, and that is the
second largest.
Oh, excuse me, second largest.
We don't want to forget that other group. It's AA something. I can't remember exactly.
So yeah, that's
second,
absolutely.
We try harder.
Yeah. Okay, that makes a big difference there. And we and the organization is the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. We want to invite your questions in at 503-231-8187 to ask about Social Security. And I know I have one on board here. If you hold on just a moment, Thomas, because what I want to do is put this bug here in Max's ear. Now, we have the roughly $26, $27 trillion that's supposed to be in the reserve fund that belongs to Social Security. However, the government, I understand, has borrowed this, or at least that's what my group of colleagues and coworkers were told at one of our employer-sponsored Social Security forums. And so the first thing you hear is, well, the government has borrowed all of that money that was in the trust fund. And that's the kind of thing that raises fears for people. It doesn't matter that there have been various numbers of special treasury bonds that the government has invested in or other things that the government has given us as guarantees that this money will be available or that they would do a fund transfer. But the fact that many people hear that money is actually not in there. Can you address that for us?
Absolutely. I was about to give you the third myth, which is that there's no money there. It's all been borrowed and spent. It's really important to understand how the program operates and what happens with this money. This excess money that comes in beyond what is paid in benefits each year is put into an account. It's called a Social Security Trust Account. And by the way, even though this past year payroll taxes did not add up to quite enough to pay benefits, there are other revenues that go into the Social Security program. There is the interest on these bonds that are held by the government in a Social Security trust fund, and there are taxes on benefits above a certain, for some people, above a certain income. So in total, more money came into the system, about $69 billion from all those three sources than was paid in benefits. Now, what happens to this money? It needs to be earning interest. So it is invested in the safest investment possible, and that's U.S. Treasury bills. These are government bonds. And I often hear people say, well, their trust fund is a figment of someone's imagination. There's no money there. It's just a bunch of IOUs. These are not, that makes you think they're just little scraps of paper in a box saying, with some signature.
Or non-negotiable instruments, basically.
It's important that people understand that these are government bonds. And at some of these town meetings that I've held, this often comes up. And skeptics will say, well, these are worthless IOUs. And I point out, if I happen to have a big box of these government bonds here at the meeting in front of me, and I offered them up to anybody at the end of the meeting and said, help yourself to a couple bonds, they'd be gone.
Absolutely.
Because they have value.
Yes.
They wouldn't just be...
They have intrinsic value. Yes.
They're backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Now, the government has never forfeited on its own bonds. That is not going to happen. If that ever happened, we wouldn't have a radio call and show about Social Security.
We wouldn't have a country.
Much bigger issue to deal with.
We'd have some anarchy going on.
Exactly.
Well, let us go to our first caller. Thank you so much for waiting, Thomas. Good morning. Hello, Thomas, you're on the air. Okay, I'm getting the signal. The kick is not good. Bear with me here for a moment. Okay, I got the signal that the kick really isn't good. So, Thomas, if you can hear, call us back, 503-231-8187. And we'll go back to our guest, Max Richmond. And we were talking about the fact that one of the myths that is out there that people don't understand is the idea that there is actually no cash. There's nothing but worthless, as you put it, scraps of paper with a signature on them saying, I owe you some money. And that what is actually in the Treasury's, the Reserve Fund for Social Security are negotiable instruments. The other thing that you hear is that, well, because there are fewer people paying in because of the shrinking population, we can't possibly pull in enough money. And as you indicated, there's three sources of income for Social Security. One of those is the FICA taxes that we pay from our wages. The next is, and you've already indicated that, is the interest that comes in on the money that has been collected and is in interest-bearing accounts, not the stock market, but interest-bearing accounts. And that's a really important part, too. And what is the third source of income? I know you mentioned it, but it just totally escapes me.
Some, since the 1980, early 1980s, a portion of Social Security benefits are subject to income tax above a certain threshold. And this past year, that revenue goes right into the Social Security program, and that was about $24 billion. So the total from all three equals $781 billion, and the total expenditures from the combined trust funds amounted to $713 billion. This is in 2010.
Okay, so we are in a solvent state, correct? We have money coming in,
absolutely.
And even if we did absolutely nothing with this fund, it would last. I've heard different dates. I know I did hear you say 2036. I've heard 2027. But even 2027 to do absolutely nothing.
It is 2036. Mm-hmm. That's not my number. That's the trustees, and that is the number everyone that ever that lives and breathes this
is supposed
this
to say.
Issue believes.
Believe it or not, I actually have someone on videotape who came to address my coworkers who said 2027. And he also said there's no money in there, but there's trust fund instruments, and he didn't see it clearly. So the interesting thing is you have people who work and who are supposed to be giving the information out about Social Security who, while seemingly fairly knowledgeable on the broad things, are not on some of the more important things like the fact that, well, the date really is 2036. But let me go to my caller here who is patiently waiting. And I want to invite the rest of you who are listening to call with questions, especially if you got specific questions about whether or not it's going to be a solvent fund for your retirement. 503-231-8187. Get it while the lines are open. Good morning, Thomas. Thanks for calling back.
Yes, good morning. Yeah, Mr. Richmond, very, very interesting subject. I have two questions for you this morning. The first should we think of this issue with the Social Security and its these stories of its relative solvency or insolvency in a larger context of this multi-decade-long project to by Wall Street to sort of to move the whole idea of Social Security and retirement into Wall Street coffers and move away from defined benefit programs for retirement. And this, you know, I've long worried that maybe the 401k, this massive redefinition over the last 20 years of the 401k and it being treated as the, you know, the central nest egg for retirement may end up being the largest single swindle perpetrated on the U.S. public. But I was wondering if you could just put it in a larger context of the general move to move retirement into private hands. And the second is, my question is, you know, it seems to me that we all often hear that there's this portrayal that the biggest attackers or those with the largest interest in dismantling Social Security or privatizing are the Republicans. And yet, you know, it seems amazing to me that through time of this debate, the most easily and refutable and basic arguments that could begin to go against these arguments of dismantlement and arguments of insolvency are just not really presented by the Democratic Party or the Democratic politicians. And indeed, the most obvious solutions, such as, you know, incremental increases in the contributions by wealthier individuals and different tax ways of altering the tax structure, et cetera, and all, you know, and because I think, you know, people from my generation, people in their 40s and 30s and 40s, they have been largely now essentially brainwashed into just accepting the fact that Social Security is just not going to be there. And this is amazing when we consider the fact that I think locally here in Oregon, something like almost half of individuals who are retired, seniors, rely on Social Security for either, you know, half or all of their income. I wonder if you could comment.
Those are great questions. Thank you, Thomas.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, it's a terrific question from a obviously very very well informed, knowledgeable caller. On the first point, he's absolutely right that there has been a ongoing movement to transfer Social Security into a private investment account. And I mentioned this in my opening remarks. This was one of President Bush's signature issues immediately after he was reelected. We were astounded. We were sitting in our conference room. He gave a press conference the day after the election of 2004, and the first thing he said was, "I have earned a lot of political capital in this election, and I intend to use it to privatize Social Security," We all we remember that. I'm sure the obviously the caller remembers that.
Yes.
And the president proceeded to have a program of going to 30 towns in 30 days, and then they added another 30 in the next 30 days to lobby the American people on the benefits of private putting Social Security into private individual accounts. And we at this organization, the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, we followed the president. We didn't have Air Force One, so it was a little harder to go to all these places. But we got to many of them. I went to many of the locations, either just before or after the president appeared, or we bought radio time or television ads. And we countered that every step of the way. And thank God he did not succeed, because we saw what happened to private investment accounts. The caller mentioned 401ks that collapsed.
Yes.
And Social Security was there. It was not turned into a private system. That would have been disastrous. So we succeeded at that point. But this is as the caller mentioned, this is an ongoing effort. There's so much money at stake that we know that there are some of these conservative think tanks that have been promoting privatization for years, for decades.
Well, pretty much
since their funding from Wall Street.
Yes, pretty much since Social Security started some 76 years or so ago. It's been under attack because people did not want that kind of stability for the middle class.
Well, that's a good point. The other comment the caller made was, why have some of these obvious solutions not been proposed? One of the most obvious is to, and he mentioned it, raise the wage base, the amount of wages subject to payroll tax. It's right now $106,800. After that, you don't pay into Social Security. There is, in fact, a discussion taking place to make some changes that would bring more revenue in. At one end of the argument, just lift the wage base altogether, like we have with Medicare. You pay in your Medicare, your 1.45% up to whatever income you make. Why have a limit on at all on the Social Security part of the payroll tax? But there are a lot of ways to address that besides lifting the cap altogether. You could have kind of a hold harmless income level where it would stop at 106 and maybe start again at 250 or 350. And it could even be a smaller percentage at that point. But there are many ways to address that revenue flow that could bring more money into the system. And I honestly believe that people at that income level would not have huge objections to helping and would think it's fair to provide more revenue for the program. I've heard on an interview Warren Buffett not long ago talking about how he pays as much in Social Security as his personal secretary, who has a lot less
which
income
is not
than he does.
Right.
But they both are capped out at the same
right.
level, and he thinks that's not right.
And that, thank God that he does, because he's one of the few voices that are making sense. I have some of the callers backed up, but one of the things that I do want to address when I get an opportunity is the fact that we have people who are in the current administration who are not doing us any good in terms of protecting Social Security as well. And so their voices are adding to the confusion. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland. I'm Celeste Carey, co-host, speaking with Max Richmond, who is the acting, are you acting or current CEO? I found two different sorts of information.
I'm the executive vice president and the acting CEO.
There we go. And former staff director,
the
very long title, but a long illustrious career, a former staff director of the Senate Special Committee on Aging and a 16-year veteran of Capitol Hill. We are taking calls at 503-231-8187, and we'll go to our next caller. Good morning. Good morning, Jack. Jack, you're on the air.
Hello?
Oh, John, I'm sorry. John, you're on the air.
This is John. Anyhow,
yes.
I just had a couple of comments. essentially, currently the payroll tax has been cut by 50% by Obama, so I didn't hear that mentioned, and they're not likely to reinstate that next year, so that's a substantial cut in revenue. And the other comment I wanted to make, which you can address, is that it's always addressed as an entitlement, as your guest speaker has stated, when those people have earned it. It's not an entitlement. They've earned that. So,
well, good questions. Max?
Well, on the first point, the caller is correct that the payroll tax was reduced by the administration as a way to pump up the economy to give people more money in their paychecks. At the same time, the same process that was used to do that automatically moves money from general revenues back into Social Security, the Social Security program. So there is no net loss whatsoever. That money is being replaced immediately from general revenues. The thought was the quickest way to put money in people's pockets was to put less money into the Social Security withholding. So that did not affect the numbers whatsoever in the trustees report. And you know, I suppose entitlement is a misnomer in some ways, but you know, people pay into it. They are entitled to get the benefits. They earn them. He's right. It's not a gift. It's not welfare. They paid into the program. They paid their FICA tax, and they have a right, whether it's an entitlement or there may be some image of entitlement that is negative, but they have a right to get their benefits. By the way, I wanted to make one other point, which often escapes the debate. We all know the term FICA tax. FICA stands for Federal Insurance Contribution Act. This is an insurance program for families. Yes, it's for a secure retirement, a basic retirement security, but it's also insurance for families. About 30% of Social Security benefits go to non-retired workers, disabled, survivors,
and Medicare
spouses.
Mm-hmm.
About 5 million or more children get by in life because of Social Security in the event that it's there, in the event that a working parent becomes disabled or dies young. This is insurance for families. Yes, it's for retirement, but it is insurance. If you are a 27-year-old worker with a spouse and two children, you have right now, never mind what happens when you get to retirement age, you have right now about $500,000 in value of life and disability insurance. So everybody's got a stake in this, and we need to educate people, and I'm so thankful that you have me on your program to do my part to try to get the word out in the Portland area.
And thank you so much for it. And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. I got a question. It seems to me that one of the reasons that Social Security might not be around in the future is that since it's tied to the payroll tax and the fact that most of the jobs are being outsourced to other countries, that seems to me that inevitably it's going to go away because jobs are going away.
Well, you know, the trustees who have just issued their report, their annual report, they're looking, when they do their analysis, I talked to someone recently who was a part of that a number of years ago, and they and their advisors sit in a room and they discuss all of the variables. You know, how many people are going to retire early at 62 and have a reduced benefit, but will have a benefit over a longer period of time? What does that do to the bottom line? How many people will work until they're 70 and have a higher benefit, and what's their longevity? And they look at issues like the revenue coming from the payroll tax in a larger context of the economy. And I have to believe that when they come up with a number, they know what they're talking about. So obviously there's a there are issues related to outsourcing and how that impacts the program, but I believe that all of that is taken into account. The bottom line is if unemployment goes down, our economy gets back on track, more people will be working here in this country, more people will be paying payroll tax. A lot of the estimates of the trustees are based on what they call intermediate assumptions about what's going to happen in the economy. If the economy does a little bit better over the next 5-10 years, that 2036 number will get better as well without anybody doing anything. So I think that I'm fairly confident in that number. They struggle to come up with the correct dates for the program, and I feel pretty confident in that.
Thank you very much for your question, Michael. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Celeste Carey, co-host. We're speaking with Max Richmond, who is the executive director and acting CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. You can ask your questions of him. Help debunk the myths that you hear out in the electronic grapevines or in the media or even at your place of employment. Give us a call, and you can answer your questions at 503-231-8187. And we'll go to Pat. Good morning, and thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Back in March 2007, the AARP Bulletin had a poll that they highlighted. It's called Strengthening Social Security. Excuse me. It was a reaction to 8 options for closing the gap between the amount now promised and available funds. And the first 3 options would close the gap by over 100%. And the first one was to increase the cap. Second one is to increase payroll tax. And the third one was to change the benefit formula, diverting more to poor recipients. And all those had favorable results above 50% of the people that were polled. And I was wondering, this was given by the Knowledge Networks. And are you aware of this poll, and is it valid?
Thank you. Good question.
I'm not aware of this specific poll. But the last point that you mentioned raises some red flags, if I'm understanding it correctly.
And the last point being divert funds to the poor recipients?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And what I take from that comment is that those funds would be diverted from other recipients.
Mm-hmm.
I assume that's what the point is.
Well, I'm not understanding how that would close a gap myself.
I don't know either. But, sometimes the best defense is a good offense, and one of the strategies might be to go on the offensive while you're doing what you're doing and looking at the option of Social Security Plus as pushed forward by Stephen Hill. And that might be something that would get retirees and people with disabilities even more involved in your quest to save and strengthen Social Security.
Well, we are on the fence offense as much as we possibly can be, because there are attacks on this program are nonstop. I was trying to make the same point that Celeste made, that, you know, diverting money from two things. Diverting money from, I assume, some recipients to poor, better-off recipients to poorer recipients. First of all, I don't see how that changes the bottom line. There's this same, if the same money is paid out in benefits, I don't see that as a way to have the solvency of the program extended. But beyond that, this program is not a welfare program, and I think the way it's structured, it replaces a certain amount of income. It should be a little more, but income that individuals earn and as benefits, and it's based on a formula that I think has been pretty well thought out. If what the caller's talking about is reducing benefits for some wealthier recipients and adding them to poorer recipients. I'm all for increased benefits.
But that's just reallocation of funds, though. That doesn't really close the gap.
Not only is it a reallocation of funds, but it is kind of the putting a toe in the water of turning this program into a means-tested program where your benefits are going to be based on your income. And I have a real problem with that. The program has endured for, as you mentioned, 76 years almost now, because it is a program that is universally supported. Virtually everybody that's working pays in, and everybody gets benefits. If it's turned into, and that sounds like what caller was maybe talking about, a means-tested program, it really becomes like welfare. And we know welfare is not all that popular, certainly not as popular and supported across the board as Social Security is. And at all these meetings I've had around the country, I often ask how many of you are on Social Security, and usually it's the vast majority in the audience. And I say, how many of you are ashamed to be on Social Security? Well, no hand goes up. And I say, how many of you would be proud to be on welfare? Nobody.
Well, you know, it's the only difference between welfare and Social Security, to really be honest, is the fact that you pay more directly into a personal relationship with one fund of money than the other. That's really the only difference.
Well, it's true. You pay into the program, you earn
more,
a benefit,
more directly.
And your benefit does not depend on whether what your economic situation is. You have paid into it. You don't know how long you're going to live. You don't know at what point these benefits will help you or your family if you die young or become disabled. So it's very different from a welfare program, which is based just on your economic situation.
Well, no, when I say that it's not very different, I mean in terms of the fact that it is a government-supported assistance program. And that's the bottom line, you know, when you look at them both. But I don't want to get diverted into that. That's another discussion entirely.
Yes.
We have a couple of more callers here. But one of the things that I really wanted to address so that when we come back is the relationship of some of our former and current legislators to supporting wholesome changes for Social Security, and then some of those who are really loud, like Alan Simpson, and claiming some of the most obscure nonsense you've ever heard, that are hurting our cause and making it really difficult for people to be able to have a sound view of what they can do or should do regarding Social Security. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland, and we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. Could you tell me the name of the organization again and a phone number that I could call so I could join, because I've never heard of the organization?
I can tell you, Celeste, if you'll allow me.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and there's a toll-free number. It's 800-966-1935, the year Social Security was passed into law. So 1-800-966-1935.
Okay, very good. And I think one thing about raising the right now, when you pay into Social Security, you get a certain percentage of whatever money you paid into it, right?
Right. It's a formula. It's called a replacement rate. But you're right. Basically, you're right. Yes.
Why don't they? As far as that $106,000 and some odd change anyway, if they just took the cap off of that and paid back, I mean, whenever the same rate is, I mean, those people that make above $106,000 shouldn't have any complaint about it, I would think, right?
If in fact, this is a point that's often overlooked in the calculation of what would happen if the cap was lifted altogether. If we're true to the formula, the replacement rate, and it is complicated, I've had it explained to me a few times, and I still have trouble explaining it to others. But if you're true to the formula, those people who would pay more if you lifted the cap would get a better benefit, a higher benefit. So you have to take that into account in determining where does that leave the program? What is the bottom line? Because it would not all be net to the program, since they would get some increased benefits. Now that is a whole other discussion of whether their benefits would increase or if they would increase at the same replacement rate. But you make a very good point. If they would have less to complain about if their benefits would be increased, they might complain anyway, but they wouldn't be that justified.
Well, you can please some of the people some of the time.
The point is they should just make it fair for everybody, no matter what your income rate is and whatever. And just if you make, $210,000 a year, you would be paying in the same percentage as a person paying in $40,000 a year.
And, exactly right. And then that's my point. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And then you would get back the same percentage rate. There should be no grumbling from the wealthy class, because they're going to be getting their just dues anyway.
Well, thank you for your call. Good point.
Okay, thanks, and I'll check out your organization, because I didn't like AARP very well.
Thank you so much.
And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Fine.
Excellent show, by the way. Excellent show. I like the thought that Paul Ryan has, and that is everybody who is 55 and older today will continue to receive their Social Security. Everybody who is 55 and under, obviously 54 and under, we will begin to phase it out, and people can invest in their own way of investing for their future, because like Paul Ryan said, Social Security today through the government is a Ponzi scheme, worse than what Madoff was conducting years ago, and it's not going to survive.
And this is based
there
on
really
what?
Is no more money.
And this is based on what?
This is based on Paul Ryan's facts,
and Paul Ryan got his facts from where?
Yeah, from the Heritage Foundation.
Okay, well, let's have Max answer that, because we're running out of time, and what you said is directly contradicting everything we've heard, including the trustee report. Max, your reply?
Well, first of all, all of your callers have been so well informed, and I'm not saying the following just because I disagree with the caller, but he's totally misunderstanding the actual facts, and I don't know where he got his information. The Ryan bill that has raised such controversy doesn't deal with Social Security at all. It only talks, the controversy on the Ryan bill is involves Medicare, and he doesn't even talk about Social Security. This is how some of these myths are started. And people talk to other people, and pretty soon you've got something out in the public arena that's completely wrong. Paul Ryan doesn't even talk about Social Security. His idea on Medicare, not Social Security, is that those people that are 55 and older, if this becomes law, the date it is enacted, they would be able to stay in traditional Medicare. People that are on the program or 55 and older could get on the program. People under 55 would be given a voucher when they reach retirement, let's say it's 65, and instead of having traditional Medicare, which is enjoyed now by so many millions of people, they would have a voucher, and they would be told, go out and buy insurance, health insurance on your own. And the reality is they'd have a hard time buying insurance. Medicare was created because insurance companies don't want to insure older people.
Absolutely.
They don't make enough money to make it worth it. So that's why we have Medicare. And the system that Congressman Paul Ryan talks about, these vouchers would not keep up with health care costs. So you'd be falling further and further behind. A report was just issued a week ago in Washington that someone under 55 would have to have save another $186,000 to pay out of pocket for their health care costs, since they wouldn't be eligible for traditional Medicare. Nothing whatsoever to do with Social Security.
We have just a few more minutes here, and we have one more caller. We'll try to get that caller in. Good morning. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. Gosh, always call too late. Yeah, your guest just made another great point for single payer, but that's not the subject. I just want to, these things are tied together, and I'll try and be quick. I got sick and almost died a few years ago, and I was making a good income, self-employed, and, it destroyed my life, basically. And we had insurance and bankrupted us, and the economy fell to pieces just after that. So I was left. I was forced to take early Social Security just to have some kind of income. And anybody that's listening, and maybe there's others out there, thank goodness that it's there. I grudge not one penny that I've paid in my working life, and I'm as independent a son of a you-know-what as anybody that ever walked the face of this country. And it's also why I've never become a citizen. I'm not going to grow old here. So thank you for your program, and thank you for helping us to understand these things better. Keep up the good work.
Well, thank you for your call, Brian. Well, we've only got about another couple of minutes here, but in brief, Max, if you could tell people first where to find information, where's your website, and a contact phone number. And if you plan on being in Portland, or if there's someone else you know that they could check into to maybe attend a community meeting or town hall meeting.
Well, as I mentioned, our 800 number is 1-800-966-1935. The website, which has some excellent material in it, is www.NCPSSM, National Committee Preserve Social Security Medicare, NCPSSM.org. I don't have any immediate plans to be in the area, but I have been there a number of times. I was with Congressman Peter DeFazio just a little bit south of Portland last fall. I have been in the Portland area with a number of other members of Congress holding town meetings. But I will be sure, if I'm there, not only will we let our members know, but I'll be sure I've made a note here, Celeste, to let you know, and maybe
Great.
You can help inform
Get the
people
word out.
Of the whereabouts, my whereabouts, and have them attend.
Thank you so much. We've been speaking with Max Richmond, who is the Executive Director and Acting CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Stay tuned to KBOO Portland coming up at 9 o'clock, the Old Mall Variety Hour with Stephen Zunis. 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia, 10:15. Barbara Bernstein speaks with Alan Refkin about the environmental significance of world population eclipsing 7 billion. 11, Sounds of Awareness, with how to deal with emotionally explosive people, dinosaur brains, and emotional vampires. 11:30, Crystal Lee speaks with Mark Friedman on The Big Shift, navigating the new stage beyond midlife. And thanks to all of our KBOO members who have renewed, joined, or any other way increased their membership. This is your Community Connection, KBOO Portland.